Okay. Our next presentation is teaching a laboratory intensive course using distance education, and Julie Howe is going to be our presenter.
Hi. I'm going to continue on with what David and Dennis have been talking about the distance program at Auburn, except I'm specifically going to talk about the laboratory aspect of the course, and then specifically with trying to offer a distance program for graduate students. And so as you've probably heard, we're trying to offer a master's program in degrees in soil and crop sciences in distance. And obviously, when you have a master's program, you're probably going to have a few laboratory science-based courses. The courses, as I think David has already talked about, that we're offering are soil microbiology, soil physics, and soil chemistry, soil resources and conservation, plant genetics, and crop improvement. And we also have some deficiency courses that are offered as distance that are basically undergrad courses in basic crop science, basic soil science, and turfgrass science. And primarily, these are the courses I'm going to be referencing or providing examples for today. So in general, just to kind of think about a laboratory class in the graduate education, most graduate labs are going to require at least some sort of combination of these, an introduction to some sort of concept or technique, followed by or maybe including instead of a data collection type of thing, and then having some sort of trying to synthesize or analyze data or and then somehow trying to interpret it. And maybe it will result in a lab report or some sort of way to synthesize the information together. And so I've kind of grouped the type of labs that most people might offer for their courses as a field trip type or a demonstration type lab, a data collection type lab, and an experimental type lab where you may generate some data to collect, but there's a kind of a process or a procedure involved. And in order to convert an on-campus class into an online class, then we have several different techniques that our department has used. And I'm going to talk about these individually: the video, short-term lab visits, experiment at home, and the virtual lab technique. So the video is really the most suitable for field trips and demonstration type labs. Especially if you're trying to talk about ecosystems and landforms and topography, it's kind of difficult to do that without actually going out into nature. And also, we have, like the turfgrass class tends to tour specialized structures like football, athletic fields and things that the video would work well for. Also, it's good for demonstration, whether that demonstration is some sort of chemical technique like a heat of hydration or demonstration of equipment like a pH meter or how to do something like determine slope or other techniques that might be interesting. One thing we've noticed, and this is the thing, is videos can be dry and boring. Students don't, you know, after a while, even I get bored watching, you know, as much as I'm interested in the topic. Sometimes videos get dry and boring, so we came up with some techniques to kind of spice these up a little bit. Maybe add a quiz or a questionnaire to answer during the video. Maybe have to write a report based on this, so students are forced to take notes and think about what they're doing. Also, maybe they actually collect data. David actually incorporates looking at a germination study and where they have does the study and then they have to count what's the percent of germination, things like that. So they're actively participating in it. Or combine that lab with another format, and I use this a little bit. Maybe combine that with an experiment at home or some sort of collection. Maybe the video shows you how to do the collection, and then you go home and do it yourself. Or maybe there's some provided visuals that are sent to the student that they can look at while they're doing the video. Or a virtual lab. For example, I use a video of measuring pH, calibrating a pH meter, and then I follow that up with a virtual lab that kind of gives them some steps to do that. And I'll show you a picture of that later. So the pros and cons: videos are nice because they do have that audio-visual skill, they're personable, and they are editable to an extent, so you can, you know, make it look perfect and pretty. The downside to these video things are that it requires some technical support and equipment. You need a videographer, in order to make it look professional, you need good equipment, good editing facilities, and you need lighting, and you also need time to make sure you plan and produce this to make it look professional. They are difficult to update over time. You know, it is takes, you know, the videographer who did one of my videos, he's no longer there, so it's not easy to go back and do that. Also, you know, for example, one of my videos, I was trying to show the meniscus, and the videographer did a good job zooming in, but he didn't quite get it in focus, and not to mention he didn't bother to tell me there's all this other stuff in the background that really, you know, I was trying to show where to fill to the level, and you can't really tell that at all from this picture, so then it's really hard to go back and set this all up again to do the lab again. And then you may have other possible problems during production, and these are just basically production problems. You might have poor sound, poor microphones, poor lighting that doesn't show things up. Maybe your equipment or facilities aren't very good. Maybe you're not even a good speaker. And if you're doing stuff outside, you may have problems with wind noise, rain. You know, you have to plan. The lighting might not be good again. So these are things to think about with videos. And then also scheduling everything can be a problem. And again, unless you're combining it with something else and not thinking about how to spice up those videos, they can end up being dry and the students don't get much out of them. So this is really not a very distance technique, but was one technique that I felt like I had to do because our soil microbiology class is doing this. These short-term on-campus, these can be a couple of days to a week stay and doing the lab on campus. These are good for labs that are difficult to convey using other formats and also maybe something that might require some sort of supervision or expensive technique or something like that. So, for example, the microbiology, as I mentioned, they use E. coli. Well, you can't really do that too much at home or you don't want to. And they also use microscopes and gels and things like that that are hard to do at home. It's also a fairly difficult subject material to teach, and it's fairly difficult to video. There's some logistical and visual difficulties. So the pros and cons for this technique, it's nice because, man, you've got the students there. It's really not a distance approach at all, so you get to meet the students, interact. It's really good for activities that are hard to teach where you get that instructor feedback. A good example would be focusing a microscope. I can tell you all day long how you need to do this, but really, in order to be able to do it, in order to zoom in on what you're looking for, you really need to practice it. So, you know, and you don't have to adapt it from your on-campus class. It is technically an on-campus type class. But it's not a distance education technique. It requires a significant time commitment. There are lots of logistical issues, and this is probably the most important part, I think, scheduling. You may think, okay, well, I got to think about when I can teach it. But you also have to think about when all your other students can teach it. And it might be fine if you have two students in the class, but if you have 10, are you going to get 10 students to be able to arrive on the same days at the same time, have housing? What if there's a football game that weekend or whatever, and you can't get a hotel room for the part of that time? It's different. So you also have space and equipment, possible limitations, and, again, housing and travel issues. The next approach would be to do some sort of experiment at home. Obviously, these are suitable for things like collections, like a plant collection, or maybe experiments involving a non-toxic substance. So you could do something at home with everyday items. These would probably require some sort of limited space and equipment or maybe even a limited time commitment to do these experiments. So, again, seed, plant, insect collections are good. You have to be, you know, maybe that you might require them to collect them, identify them, press them, you know, dry them, and mount them to, you know, something that they might turn in. Maybe you want to diagnose some sort of nutrient deficiency, disease, herbicide damage. Maybe this would be a photograph or something like that. Or maybe you need to do some sort of experiment where you evaluate fertilizers or other chemicals on plant growth, such as TIF burn or differential greening due to nitrogen. Or maybe you want to evaluate how plant characteristics work. So there's a lot of different ways to do experiments, especially in agronomy at home. The pros, that this is a live experience. It's interactive. It's logistically pretty easy if you can set it up right. It's good because it provides some independent work for the student, and students probably would get a little more enthusiastic about it. As long as they know for sure what they're doing, because they don't have you there to ask questions all the time. And it gives good experience at actually conducting experiments or doing some independent work. And it gives that hands-on knowledge. However, some assignments just aren't appropriate for this technique. Equipment, supplies, facilities, time. And the other thing that I think is probably the most important thing to consider about these is labs may require very detailed instructions, and you may not get what you expect. So, for example, a plant collection, Here are three examples of three students, what they turned in. They did a plant collection, and they were supposed to collect the material, dry it, press it using a plant press, label it, and everything. And you see, like, one of them has fungus growing on it. One of them looks like they just ripped up a handful of grass and stuffed it in an envelope, and you can't really identify any of the plant parts very well. And then some of them, they used different size pieces of paper and cut them out, and they didn't type it up very well. So these are some things where, you know, if you're not specific or if students don't read the instructions very well, you may not get what you expect. And then also, as I think David mentioned, sometimes you get some plagiarism issues. If you have people taking pictures of things out in the nature, maybe something they can copy this from the internet pretty easily, or they could fabricate the results from an at-home experiment. So the last technique I'll talk about is virtual labs, and I use these in some of my courses. Just an idea what this virtual lab is to take a kind of a cartoonize the procedure that's used and have the students use it to understand what the procedure might. Maybe they don't need to know the whole detail of exactly how you would do it and don't give you that lab technique, but maybe that gives you an idea of exactly how, you know, what are the steps to get to this point and then generate some data for analysis. And this is actually pretty good for time-consuming labs. Some of my soil chemistry labs are very long. In fact, I can't even do them in a regular lab course. I have to divide the lab into every student does a part of the lab, and then I bring all the data for the class together because it's so difficult. You know, you take a centrifuging step, and it takes 20 minutes, and you've got to filter it, and that takes time, and suddenly your three-hour lecture period has disappeared completely, especially if students don't work very quickly. So one of the examples that I use is to compare, to look at three different anion sorption to soil. And we start off with a pre-lab quiz where they have to make the calculations like you would do if you were trying to prepare solutions in order to add to the soil. Then the simulation or the virtual lab does a simulation of the sample preparation, the weighing the soil, the adding the solutions to them. And I do it kind of in bulk so it's not 100 million steps where you pour a lot of things. You can see here two graduated cylinders working simultaneously so that you can tell we're adding it to every tube. We have a shaking and centrifuge step, and then it goes to the analysis, which is what we do in class, is we send it to the technician who comes back the next day with the data. And then the last step is they get, once they analyze it, they get these tabs with the nitrate data, the sulfate data, the phosphate data, and then the standards. And this is the actual data that would come from the lab that has not been adjusted. And so the students then are required to calculate a standard curve, do the unit conversions, then plot the data, interpret it, and then write a report on it. So it kind of makes the student do the whole process, but because the first part of it is so much faster, they can spend a lot more time really pulling that data together and trying to do a better job on the actual report part. Some of the other features that I've added for these virtual labs is to add some randomization of data so that you, within a certain limit, so that students don't have the same data, so that you don't have everybody gets the same answer. It's got some randomization in it. You can also set the labs up to be based on incorrect, so if they can make mistakes and still get results out, and they have to look at it and interpret whether this is right or wrong. I have one lab that does this. I have another lab that it won't let you go through unless you do everything correctly, so that halts the students. So every lab is generally designed to have one little feature that adds a different aspect of lab to it, a real lab to it. You can also put quizzes in there, as I showed you. And then the other thing that I do is the final data is emailed to both the instructor and to the student. And as I noticed last week before I came here, I had several students do the distance lab, and they found that everybody had been calculating one of the things wrong. So I sent it back to the student and I said, guess what? Everybody, y'all are making mistakes on this. Y'all need to go and do it again. And that way I can provide feedback more immediately rather than just waiting till the final and getting the answer in the report. And so students can repeat labs also as well. So that helps. So the pros and cons on this, it's interactive. You can predict what the outcome is going to be for that lab, however you decide to do it. It's logistically easy once you get it completed. It can provide procedural experience and some data collection, and it really has a low time input for the student and allows it more time to think about that data analysis and synthesis phase. And also, it's fairly cross-platform. Some activities are really just not suitable for this, especially demonstrating how to use equipment. Sometimes that doesn't work by itself. Natural features obviously can't be very well cartoonized. Lab technique, we can't really show that too much. Maybe in one aspect, but not really overall lab technique. So the problem with these virtual labs, they require a lot of planning, and they require a programmer. And so that was probably my greatest challenge, and I did not anticipate how much work that would be to work with them. So it's also expensive, and it may not actually get out what you want it to be. So I kind of made these graphs, and I don't know how much time I have, but I don't think I have a lot. I basically looked, kind of summarized all these things from the student perspective, and then the second slide is on instructor perspective, and where I grouped them. The top half is hands-on, you know, instructor feedback, things that you would like a high rating in, and the bottom part of it is expense, student logistics, time commitment, things that you would maybe want low or easy commitments on them. And you see that there's no one answer to any of these from a student perspective. And when you get from the instructor perspective, you don't see one answer either. There's no really perfect solution for it, and what you really need to do is think about your lab, what you can do, and be creative to try to get what you're trying to get. Think about your learning objectives and figure out how you can get a student to learn it in the most interactive way possible so that you can have a distance class that's equivalent to your on-campus class. So my overall conclusions are that when you convert from an on-campus class to an on-campus class, the best strategy is probably a multiple approach strategy. All of them are going to require significant time commitment, and if you are trying to approve a course for the first time, we've had some trouble with the curriculum committee. They don't like certain labs. They don't like certain things, and so starting out with maybe an on-campus lab for the first couple of times might help you get approval, and then after that, they don't seem to be as concerned about you making changes to the course. So that may not be a very politically correct answer, but that may be the reality. The last thing I want to mention before I conclude here, or in my conclusions, is that it might be a good idea to separate the lecture and lab component. Some students don't really need that lab for whatever they're doing. Maybe they want to go into policy or something like that, but they still need to have that microbiology experience, right? So if you separate them, and we have done that in particular with microbiology, separate those two, then the students that really need to take the lab, they can, and they can go to a lot more trouble to take that lab, whereas the students that don't need it, it's not a hassle, and they don't have to go through it. So thank you for listening, and I'm happy to entertain questions.
Let's give everybody a